Love God, love your neighbor, change the world. Love God, love your neighbor, change the world. In the summer of 2014, the Episcopal Diocese of Ohio purchased a trademark license for these particular set of words. Love God, love your neighbor, change the world. They are, of course, what I would call the Cliff Notes version of the answer we just heard Jesus give the Pharisees during yet another round of grilling and trying to back him into a theological corner. When asked, quote, by a lawyer in order to test him, "Teacher, which commandment in the law is the greatest?" He answers, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and all your soul and with all your mind. This is the greatest and first commandment. And the second is like it, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." Or put another way, love God, love your neighbor, change the world. So where did this answer come from for Jesus? And how might his answer help us make meaning and find purpose for who we are as people of faith today? Each week, before we read the Hebrew scriptures, we chant the Shema quite regularly. Shema Israel, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Which means, "Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord is one." It is a prayer that our Jewish brothers and sisters say every morning when they wake and every evening before going to sleep. For them, they are words as familiar as so many of ours in our tradition here are familiar to us, making kind of a spiritual groove in our souls. I can walk into any hospital room and start the Lord's Prayer, and people who haven't been in church in years somehow know those words. Or if you're an Episcopalian, we start saying the Creed, and those words fall off your tongue. Or maybe even the Confession. Those words that we repeat again and again drip on us like water on stone, making deep grooves into our spiritual memory. The prayer of the Shema was like that. It comes from the sixth chapter of Deuteronomy, and it follows the Ten Commandments and a brief speech by Moses claiming this is the greatest commandment. Moses says, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your might. Keep these words that I am commanding you today in your heart. Recite them to your children. Talk about them when you are at home and when you are away, when you lie down and when you rise. Bind them as a sign on your hand, fix them as an emblem on your forehead, and write them on the doorposts of your house and on your gates." The writer of the book of Deuteronomy is underscoring Moses' belief that faith is not just a good idea, a comforting ritual, or a cultural identity, while it may be all of those things, but that faith is in fact the very essence of a passionate life dedicated to God. And remember, Moses surely understood oppression as the leader of formerly enslaved people. They had lived in the wilderness between bondage and autonomy, decades of despair and doubt, relying at times solely on the promise that God had not abandoned them. So it seems so odd to me that the Pharisees would be surprised that Jesus would answer the Pharisees' question by reciting the Shema. What is surprising is that they asked him this question in the first place. Remember, I think it's significant to remember that this exchange with the Pharisees was probably more like a family feud than what we would think of as a modern-day bipartisan political debate. We sometimes forget that Jesus was himself a Jew, calling his people back to the way that he believed God intended for them from the beginning. He was not an outsider from his perspective, but rather a deeply committed Jew, faithful to God and committed to loving the stranger. And Jesus never loved from a distance. He was never afraid to touch or be touched, literally or emotionally, by those who needed him, those who needed his love, even those who were intent on trapping and tricking him. So how brilliant is our guy Jesus? When he simply holds up the beautiful mirror of the Jewish faith itself, passed down through the stories of Moses to remind his brothers in faith what they must have already known. They must have chanted the Shema just hours before. And either they had forgotten or had chosen to ignore. Love God, love your neighbor, change the world. And when we put it that way, doesn't it sound kind of simple? So why do we, just like our Jewish ancestors, why do we today still need reminding of what I suspect we already know too? Are we simply forgetful? I don't know about you, but at the risk of sounding like a reductionist, I am going to answer for myself and say yes. In short, I am forgetful. I forget, sometimes daily, that I too always know the answer to the question that the Pharisees still ask us, which commandment is the greatest? Love God. Love your neighbor. Change the world. And regardless of the reminders all around me, a wonderful new faith community, the stories of Scripture, the acts of love that we share and receive, all the words, all the teachings, all the prayers, songs, poems, symphonies, sonnets, in spite of it all, I still forget the answer to that question. But then, every once in a while, I remember. And it's usually by something small, the way that it happened for me this past week. Many of you know that we are blessed as the recipients of some financial gifts from past members of our faith community, including Conrad and Caroline Jobst. For a number of years now, we have been one of the benefactors of their foundation and have received a generous annual contribution, allowing us to do things that we would not be able to do through our own means, including the funding for our wonderful Carolyn Jokes Music Scholars. So this week, I sat down to write a short letter to the foundation, giving an update of our commitment to be good stewards of this gift, and to share our gratitude for the foundation's generosity, and to underscore why this is such an important time in the life of our church as a vibrant faith community in downtown Toledo. I would like to read you a small portion of what I wrote this week, hoping that it might remind all of us why Jesus and Moses before underscored the import of what we are called to do, and maybe even more importantly, why we are called to do it. Finally, I wrote on a somewhat more personal note, I would like to add my own words of thanks. I began my tenure at Trinity less than 2 months ago, and already am deeply convinced that we are living at a cusp time, standing on the edge of something extraordinary. There is no shortage of despair and division in the world around us these days. Too often we are confronted with heartache and disaster without a clear path towards hope and healing. Now, perhaps more than ever, I believe places and communities like Trinity, literally poised at the crossroads of a downtown urban setting, have a chance to make a new kind of difference. We are committed to not only keeping our doors open for another 175 years, but as we do, to seek out ways to offer new programs, support our neighbors, build alliances, break down walls that divide us from our neighbors, and live into new expressions of the Episcopal tradition we bear in ways that we hope would make Conrad and Caroline Jobst proud. My only regret is that we signed and sent that letter before I could add, oh, and by the way, everything we will do at Trinity going forward will be held up to Jesus' teaching, encouraging, challenging, inspiring us to love God, love our neighbor, and change the world. And lest I end this morning leaving you with the sense that this all sounds good but very churchy and holy, and doesn't really apply to us individually or in our daily lives, let me add one more thought. One of the things that drew me here to Trinity is the perception that God is not trapped inside these walls, or limited to the pages of any sacred text, or revealed only through our rich liturgical tradition. All of these are sacred vehicles to the heart of the divine, but not, I would suggest, any more or less than the sacred, everyday ordinariness of our lives when lived remembering that each of us is called to love God, love our neighbor, and change the world. Barbara Brown Taylor echoes this expansive understanding of God's presence in our lives throughout her book, An Altar in the World, A Geography of Faith. She writes, "People encounter God under shady oak trees, on riverbanks, at the tops of mountains, and in the long stretches of barren wilderness. God shows up in whirlwinds, starry skies, burning bushes, and perfect strangers. When people want to know more about God, the Son of God tells them to pay attention to the lilies of the field and the birds of the air, to women kneading bread and workers lining up for their pay. Whoever wrote this stuff believed that people could learn as much about the ways of God from paying attention to the world as they could from paying attention to Scripture. What is true is what happens, even when what happens is not always right. People can learn as much about the ways of God from business deals gone bad or sparrows falling to the ground as they can from reciting the books of the Bible in order. They can learn as much from a love affair or a wildflower as they can from knowing the Ten Commandments by heart." So, my beloved friends, may we remember why we are here and how we will together indeed change the world. Do whatever is set before you with humility and reverence and deep joy. Sing the Shema, change a diaper, push a wheelchair, set up for a service, listen to an annoying neighbor, write a simple thank you note or a get well card, make that overdue phone call, bake some communion bread, take a walk outside when you think you don't have the time, give away something you cherish, say prayers for those who need your forgiveness. Because you see, in the end, it's all the same. Every single moment is the same. Every task, every time in your life is as holy as the next. For me, the difference is this. When we are together as a community, I can ask you to help remind me when I forget my why along the way. Love God, love your neighbor, change the world. And as the beautiful poet Rumi so beautifully wrote, let the beauty of what we love be what we do. There are 100 different ways to kneel and kiss the ground. Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu. Adonai Echad. May it be so.